Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Scream Queen, a podcast about scary movies.
From people not typically depicted in scary movies. The Girl in the Woods is a new Crypt TV series streaming on Peacock about a girl named Carrie who leaves a cult in rural Oregon that is formed around guarding this doorway in the woods, behind which lies the stuff of our worst nightmares. But this teenage tale of monsters and demons leaves us wondering whether the scariest monsters and demons are the ones outside or the ones inside. We've got characters dealing with the effects of physical violence and abuse, bullying, dealing with issues around sexual orientation and attraction and gender dysphoria, PTSD and grief, and really people taking it out on themselves, being their own demon. The central metaphor being a doorway to evil, Carrie going through the door is, I think, kind of symbolically us going inside ourselves. And like all the best horror, it becomes so much more than about the scares. And much to our delight, we get to talk about it with two people from the show itself, Misha Osherovich, series regular who plays Nolan on the show, and co-executive producer Jasmine Johnson.
Hey!
Hello!
Hi! Nice having you.
So happy to be here.
So working in horror is something you've both done previously in your professional lives. And we're curious, what is your personal history with the genre? Are you guys scary movie lovers, or do you have a fave if you are? And let's start with Jasmine.
Ooh, me first. Okay. That's a really interesting question for me because I think working in horror, people automatically assume that I grew up loving it. I would say like half of the writers and directors that I meet with on a daily basis will tell me like some sort of crazy, horrific movie that they watched when they were three or five, or I don't know, maybe you guys are like that, but I was the opposite. My mother was so anti-horror to me back when like Blockbuster and Hollywood Video were a thing. Remember those? I couldn't even go down. I could not go down the aisle because the covers would scare me. I felt like I was doing something wrong if I even just went down that aisle. Like I was going to get in trouble with my mom because she was very much anti like scary stuff. And it wasn't until I got to be a bit older, I was in college when I watched The Descent, which if you haven't seen The Descent, please watch this.
Yes.
It is so good. Thank you, Misha. No one else co-signed that, and I'm a little annoyed because The Descent is great.
We love it. We did a whole episode
it's
on it.
Terrifying. It's legitimately terrifying.
Sorry about that. Co-sign.
And for me, I don't even remember like why I was watching this and why we were watching this in class, but I had just grown up obviously feeling like horror was the Antichrist or something, and that it was really just about blood, guts, and gore. But when I watched The Descent, that movie, first and foremost to me, was so much about the characters and about the dynamics between those women. Mm-hmm. And then you add in the creatures who, I don't remember the exact minute the creatures come in, but it's not until like the last third of the movie. And it was just like the icing on the cake for me. I was like, wait. We had all this drama with these women, like really juicy character dramas. And now we have monsters, and it just makes it so much better. And it was kind of like a mind blown moment for me. And I didn't eventually get to start working in horror until probably like 8 years later, but it sort of sparked my interest. So I'm a little behind when it comes to knowing all of the movies because I just got into the genre so late, which is why I'm like, hopefully I know the movie. And I always ask anyone I meet, like, tell me what you're watching because I just want to keep expanding and growing all the things that I've seen. But I'm a full-on fan, and I'm so thankful that I get to work in the genre now. I mean, that's what we do at Crypt. We make scary content, and it's just been so much fun.
Yeah, I mean, and also awesome. With The Descent, with that, you do kind of forget it's a scary movie. I mean, it's just like, because it's character drama. And then you're like, oh, wait, I forgot to have some vampire shits on this.
Yeah, I mean, there's some good, like, jump, like, legitimately good jump scares that aren't just jump scares for the sake of jump scares, but that, like, propel the story forward. And then, yeah, like you said, like, all of a sudden, monsters come and it's so bloody and they're fighting each other. But even still, the character dynamics from before are playing into, like, the stuff that's happening with the monsters. And I'm not here to toot The Descent. I'm here to toot our own show, Girl in the Woods. But I got to give a shout out to the movie that kind of got me into it all. So
awesome. And yeah, Misha, the same question.
Yeah, so I have a similar backstory in that I did not grow up loving or being allowed to watch horror. I had the conservative Russian parents. So like, I was watching like PBS Kids until I was like 12 years old because like they wouldn't let me watch anything else. But no, the funny thing is I even into my adult life, like I love drama and that's kind of where I always felt like I saw myself and stories that I love in film and TV. But truly my first experience with horror was being in a horror film. I did Freaky a couple years ago and like that was, I got thrown into the deep end. But what was kind of amazing about that experience is that both Chris Landon and Michael Kennedy, who co-wrote that film, and, you know, obviously a Blumhouse production, that everybody in that community, especially the queer horror community, they love horror so much. And it's part of their daily celebration of art making because they love the history of horror and all of that. So I got just a crash course in what it meant to be part of the horror community through doing Freaky. And it was just kind of that plus everything more in with Girl in the Woods. So I'm kind of loving that it's baptism by fire for me. Like I'm learning about the horror world and the history of horror and the community by being in it. So that's kind of my backstory when it comes to horror.
I mean, immersion therapy is not a bad way to go.
No, get thrown into the deep end. Why not?
Let's see. Jasmine, I'm curious, with Girl in the Woods, it started off as a couple of short films. Could you talk to us a little bit about developing the short and then how that became the series streaming now on Peacock?
For sure. Girl in the Woods is based off of two short films, the first one being The Door in the Woods, and its follow-up sequel called The Girl in the Woods. And both of these shorts and the series hold such a super special place in my heart because The Door in the Woods was one of the first things, I think I was maybe like 2 or 3 months into my job at Crypt. And it was one of my jobs at the time, we did a lot of short form content. And one of my jobs was just like to help generate shorts, find filmmakers, help come up with ideas, come up with cool monsters. And this was the first time that I was doing something like this. I had come from very traditional development, traditional being like features and hour-long television. I was at Warner Brothers Studios, which is old school, you know, movie and TV making. And this was new school, very much so. And I kind of, like Misha, was thrown into the deep end. And luckily, I think just in my time and my experience of being just working out here, I've sort of developed like a, you just gotta figure it out sort of mentality. So I just reached out to like a bunch of filmmakers and just started like racking my brain around like, what could be cool? Like, what haven't they done? What haven't we seen? And The Door in the Woods and the filmmaker Joey Green were one of the first filmmakers that I spoke to. And I just really, really loved this project. And it started out as just a basic idea, which is there's a door in the woods and it's a door to a monster dimension. And someone's going to open that door because we as humans often will do things that we are told not to do. Mm-hmm. And then from there, you know, it really sort of developed out the colony and Carrie and the Brute and all of that. And that short came out about 8 months into me being at Crypt. And it was the first one that I had brought in and it like exploded. It exploded. Something about, I don't know if it was the concept or just how fun it is or just watching people get ripped to shreds by monsters. I'm not going to try and say like what it is that you got out of it. That's your own personal business. But I love that people got something out of it because it really did. I think it's like one of our top 5 most watched shorts. And so we made a sequel called The Girl in the Woods, which I wanted to explore some deeper themes with Girl in the Woods. I really wanted to sort of focus in on Carrie and what Carrie may be holding, because Carrie really sort of is the one responsible in the short for opening the door, and it kills everybody in her colony. And so what does that look like? What is it? How does that make you feel when you're holding the weight of that guilt on your shoulders? And how do you move forward from that? Can you even move forward from that? And that's what the sequel was based around. And then from there, the sequel also did well and got the attention of networks and things like that. And we were able to then develop out the series and once again, take even more like larger themes and just sort of go deeper with the mythology and deeper with what it is that we wanted to talk about, deeper when it comes to like definitely like the characters that we're exploring. And I'm super excited with the result that we have.
Awesome. Yeah, one of the things that Tommy had brought to my attention was a show that we had both recently watched, a director that I really like, Nick Antosca. He just recently put out brand new Cherry Flavor, and another show he had done, Channel Zero, The Dream Door. And the theme, the doors usually symbolize a subconscious that the main character is suppressing, but you know that they want to let it manifest. So basically, this is directed to both of you. We'll start with Misha, but what do you think the door represents in this show?
Sure. I mean, I've always liked about horror, and it's what I'm starting to learn to love about it as an artist, both that's, you know, in horror, and now I'm writing some horror. So like it's...
Yes.
We'll talk, Jasmine. We'll talk. But I'm really loving that genre, and genre films are a really good way to explore basic human emotions, desires, fears. And I think that our series does that tenfold. I loved going to set every day because of course there's the demon makeup and the bodies and the gore and all that kind of stuff. But what we're exploring is kind of like we said at the top, it's internal demons. It's especially with teenagers, people that are finding their identity, people that are struggling with things like sexuality, their home life, school life. There's so many demons that I think we all, but you know, especially teenagers wrestle with. And the show does that so beautifully through the lens of a door to a monster dimension. And I think that's one of the things that actually excites me most about our show, is that it's so human in spite of the fact that there's so many non-humans in the show.
I mean, that was like so perfectly said. What else is there to say after that? But I will say that, you know, like Misha said, everyone wrestles with demons. I don't care if you outwardly appear like you don't, you do. And one of the things that I love about this series, and Crypt tends to try and take this lens when it comes to us developing scary content in general, is that you should be able to watch this show and get something out of it, even if you don't like horror. Like, I'll put my mom to the test with this one because she has to watch it. But like, even my mom, who doesn't like horror, should be able to watch this show and really get something deep and meaningful out of it, because to me, the scariness and the horror should be the icing on the cake. It's fun, yeah, that we have monsters, and it's fun sometimes to come on set and like see, you know, the production design and the arms thrown everywhere and all this kind of stuff. But that is the fun of it. That's the icing. The cake here is in the characters and the development and the themes and what you can get out of it from watching it. And the show, I think a good horror show or even a movie or whatever it is, should be able to exist without the horror elements. And then you add that on top. If your content cannot exist without whatever the vampire or whatever it is, it's probably a loose and flimsy concept, and I don't think that you're going to reach as wide an audience as you could, because what is it that you're trying to say? That's so important, and that's what we're trying to do with Girl in the Woods.
And that's kind of what I think we really responded to, in that it was more, you know, you look at something like A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night or something like that, where it's like, it's scary, there's vampires, but also just like the vulnerability of being alone as a woman at night, but then she's a vampire, so she doesn't have the same type of scare. So it's like interesting to watch the social dynamic play on top of the story, the scary story. And, you know, something that you both were saying that got me thinking about something else was that, you know, yes, the demons are very brutal, but the humans in the show can be very brutal to each other as well. And Misha, I was thinking about a couple of scenes that you did. Some of them were, I mean, you had a very intense performance. I got to say, I was so blown away. You were so good and so captivating in this.
Misha is so fantastic in the show.
Yes.
So fantastic. Stop. I know the script. I've seen these episodes like 15 times. And even still, I get like emotional watching it.
There, thanks, I mean, y'all.
And so how, I'm just curious, like how, who, because there's some like physically and emotionally very, very intense scenes. And I'm curious how you prepare for those and what set is like when you shoot them.
Sure. I mean, look, I'm a nerd. And that's, I will always say this. I say this to my friends because the running joke, actually, when it comes to the comedy side of things, is that I'm not categorically funny in real life. That's not a skill that I possess. And so my friends are genuinely surprised every time I like am cast in anything where I have to be funny. And it's for me, it's homework. Like it's, and the same goes for drama. Like I sat down with the script, I prepared it, I did all the nerdy actor stuff. But more than anything, this set was so remarkable in that everybody was there to, yes, have a good time and play in this amazing, you know, supernatural playground. But whether it was Kristen Ritter or Jacob Chase, our two directors, they set up an environment where I came in with all my homework. I know as I'm a non-binary individual, and like I know what I would want to see on screen when it comes to things like gender identity and the struggle of gender identity. And they let me play and set up all the guardrails, set up these beautiful scenes with these beautiful, you know, the rooms and the demons and all that stuff. But the set was safe. And the set was this family environment where everybody down to the crew was really there for the ride. And that's not something that as an actor, you don't often get that. Usually you're a cog in the machine. And that was not what I felt on this set. So basically all of my homework was honored. And that was kind of the gift that I think led us to this product that we're all so proud of, is that everybody was really in it emotionally as well as professionally.
Hmm. So was your character non-binary before you were cast, or was that later a decision?
So Nolan's struggle with gender identity was something that I was given right off the bat when it comes to the scripts that I read, the breakdown, the audition. But what was amazing all the way through the long audition process and talking to producers and talking to Kristen and even our amazing showrunner, Casey, who is also queer. And the conversation was ongoing. And I felt so included in, you know, rewrites of the script and being on set, dealing with how it was shot. Like this kid's struggle with gender identity was something that we all as a team wanted to make really authentic. And I think that, sure, I was given a description of the character, but I felt that I was both honored and a part of building this character. And that's, again, not something that you often get as an actor. So I felt really lucky through and through.
No, that's very special.
I was so moved by, I mean, there were so many things that you did that were so moving and that I felt so personally. And it reminded me of the importance of having representation on screen and having something like when Nolan sits at the, and there were several times, but in the pilot, when Nolan sits at the mirror and, you know, is done, you know, talking with Tasha, and they're like, they're there to build each other up, and they, you know, they have the FaceTime, and then they sit at the mirror and wipe the makeup off. Like, I feel like there are so many times that I've been too scared to be myself when I left the home. And that is a real fear in this thing. That's a genre film that, or a genre series that I thought was so cool and so important. And I think it's a milestone, not in that it's genre, but also that this genre show has queer characters. They have non-binary characters and queer POC characters and actors and storylines. And I want to ask this question to the both of you, but I want to start with you, Jasmine. How important was authenticity and identity to you in this project and representation and all that?
It's extremely, extremely important. I think we, all of us talking right now, have experienced what it's like to grow up and not really feel like you have seen yourself accurately represented on screen. I don't want to, like, I've heard network executives and studio executives and producers be like, oh, but we have X character. And I'm like, but is that someone that we actually want to claim? We don't know.
Very bad.
And, you know, know, I now that I am in a position that I take with a lot of seriousness. I mean, we're making a lot of fun content, but I take it very seriously. Like, what are we putting out there? And I am a woman. I am Black. I am also queer. And I want to make sure that going forward, people are authentically represented. And not only that, but that if you're telling a story about whoever it is, they need to have like a voice in telling that story. Like, it's not about profiting off of other people's experiences. It's about including everyone in the conversation. And so with this story in particular, you know, we talked to a variety of different writers and heard a variety of different pitches. And then when Casey came in with her amazing take, it was very clear that this was the direction that we needed to take the show. But then when you start to even like boil it down into particulars, like I remember after we had the scripts already written, and Misha mentioned this, but Casey and Misha getting on a conversation, like I personally am queer, but I did not struggle with gender identity, so I can't speak to that. Casey is a trans woman, but she can't speak as authentically to coming to terms with being non-binary like Misha can. And it's just really important that you have the people in the space to have those conversations, because Casey would come back to us and be like, oh, she would email us like these notes, Misha said this and Misha said that, and feels like their character would actually do this. And even something like as small as like what sort of memes maybe the character would be looking at, and the things that you just wouldn't think or wouldn't know if you don't have the authentic experience. And it makes a difference. And the fact that we're only just now, and when I say we, I don't mean Crip, but I mean the bigger we of like entertainment, are only just now starting to think that, oh, maybe this is important, is kind of absolutely ridiculous. But definitely, I just talked a lot, but yes. To no. answer your question, yes, authenticity was important.
That was a good answer.
I mean, there's so many people in this town in particular who will put profit over people. It's so encouraging to hear stories like this of people in the industry who are coming together. And it shows that, you know, even if they don't care about us, we have to care about us.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
As a Black queer woman, do you believe that it's maybe become... Well, things have changed recently, and I do think that there's avenues that are opening up to us that never existed before. So do you think that some of those roadblocks have disappeared for you in some ways? Or has it made it easier to get culturally relevant projects seen?
I would caution from using the phrase easy. I think that, I don't know how many of you guys like go on Twitter or read comments and things like that. But what I see a lot of is that just because people are starting to see maybe one or two or three characters that happen to be queer or Black or whoever it is, whatever the sort of marginalized identity is, they get up in arms and feel like something is being taken from them. Like all of a sudden, every single thing that is being made is being targeted towards whoever it is. And I don't want to use the phrase easy, because just because you like take Girl in the Woods, for instance, you have a show that has a lot of queer leads and you have one of the producers who happens to be Black, does not mean that it's still easy. It certainly is easier than what it used to be. But that does not mean that this is happening 9 times out of 10. And it definitely doesn't mean that it's happening to match like the communities that are out there. Like, we still have a lot of work to do. And I do think that there's a lot of people who want to say, I've even come up on this where I had someone tell me one time, not to knock the straight white guys, but we's about to knock the straight white guys right now. I had someone tell me like that the reason like I got a promotion one time was because like, ooh, it's like really in to have like, you know, women, especially women of color in a position, ignoring like the first 8 years of my career, not eight, but maybe seven or so of my career, where that actually stopped me from getting jobs, and people didn't want to have me in, you know, working under them or in their offices because they felt uncomfortable having a Black woman. And all the times that projects were passed on before, it's like, yeah, we have more visibility now, but we're nowhere near done. And it's still not like easy per se. And so it's really important that people understand that.
Yeah.
Yeah. If the podcast audience could see my face.
I was going to say, if I had like people, you know, say, just because I booked a couple of writing jobs, they'd be like, oh, because it's, you know, what you are is so hot right now. And it's like,
that's another one. Like,
yeah, yeah. We're trendy. We're the fad right now. We've always been in. And it's just the fact that I do believe, even though the avenue has opened up, it doesn't mean that there wasn't a struggle to get there.
Yeah.
So this is the podcast where I can ask you that question and you can express yourself and tell me all that stuff. Okay. So we good.
Oh man, we'll see. I'll get comments in my own.
Instagram. I was gonna say,
well, we'd be right there defending it, so don't even worry.
You know, Twitter and Peacock hit us up like, "What did you do?" We're like,
yeah, I got rid of Twitter so long ago. Twitter is the devil.
You know,
I don't spend a lot of time on social media, but and luckily, no one knows who I am. So, but we'll see who comes out of the woodworks to find me and be like. What you said. I didn't like that.
I'm always curious.
Yeah, there's always somebody out there ready to get annoyed about something. Yeah. So it's like.
When I talk to other creative professionals, I'm always curious because given the roadblocks and given the things that we have to struggle against, and also given the fact that there isn't a clear avenue to success, you know, like there isn't. There, you have to love something about your job more than you like crave stability, you know? And so I'm curious, like what it is about your job, what it is about the kind of creative path that you've taken, as creative professionals, what is it that so appeals to you so much? Like what, cause it can feel so audacious to make and to be and to express in this. And, because there isn't, like I said, like the stability attached to it. I mean, I remember for a while I was like, I'm going to go to medical school. Cause I know that there's 4 years of medical school and then I've got a residency and then I could be a doctor. When it came to being a poet or anything like that, there was no like 2-step process, 3-step, 4-step process. And I knew what it was. So if we can go from Misha to Jasmine, like what is it about your job that appeals to you so much?
Sure. I think every creative job is obviously difficult. And I do think that as a society, we like to point to actors when we go to the truly lack of stability, lack of sanity, lack of paycheck that is associated with acting, right? So for me, it was not only did I luck out and also put in a lot of hard work to get some great gigs, right? But funnily enough, things like Girl in the Woods have really inspired me, and this pandemic, quite frankly, to have the time to sit at home. Things like writing and producing, which I'm learning that I really enjoy, and I'm also lucky enough to start to like get some traction there. There's an agency element that really speaks to me, and I really enjoy that. Even there, if the stability is out the window, even if the paycheck is intermittent, if existent, that I have agency over the kind of career that I'm building, the stories that I'm telling, but also the life that I'm living. I live with one of my best friends and my co-writer right now. And we get up every morning and we get to work and we decide what kind of change we want to see in the world and what stories we want to tell. I do things like this where I get to talk about a project that I'm so ridiculously passionate about because my non-binariness, my queer experience, and my love for horror are all being married in a series that I think will have a big social impact. The life is what I'm in it for. I'm in it for the ability to create a life that I'm proud of, and not to get too deep into it, but as a sober individual, as somebody who addiction is a very big part of my life, I actually have written on my phone, like on the background, I'm going to create a life that I am proud of as opposed to one that I want to escape from. That's kind of my mantra to keep me, you know, on my sober path. And this career is a big part of that. I'm really proud of what I'm building, what we are building with Crypt. And that it's so gratifying that I get to be on that journey, even when it gets hard, even when it gets difficult. So that's me.
Damn. That was beautiful.
Thanks.
I obviously have had a different path than Misha. I've only ever had like full-time jobs at companies, but I will say that I don't ever, you know, if I felt like you said that there was that I knew sort of what path to take. I certainly know what it's like to make no money. My first job, I want to say I made like $400 a week. I don't even know if that's legal, but it is what it was. And because I came out here from the East Coast, I'm from Maryland. I don't have any family. I don't have anything. I don't have any friends even that were a part of the business. And that can be really hard because so many people typically do. And it's like, how do you work your way to what it is that you want to be? I didn't even know what it is that I wanted to be. I went to school and I studied film, but I didn't feel like being like a director or a writer was necessarily the right path for myself. So I came out here sort of a little bit wanderless and stumbled into the first job I could get, made very little money. I live in a very expensive city. I didn't have any family or anything out here. And for a long time, it was, to be blunt, horrible. Mm-hmm. It was really, really not fun for a long time. And it was a struggle. But any time that I felt like I wanted to give up, and there were certainly plenty of times where I was like, when I was younger, I thought maybe I wanted to be like a teacher. And then I realized that I don't want to deal with kids or teenagers. So but there was like in the back of my mind, like I would think like, you just made such a mistake. You can still do it now. Go to school, get out before it's too late. But I had like such a deep desire to like create content that I would have loved to have seen when I was younger. And that never, ever left me. And it was enough to keep pushing me forward and just hoping and dreaming that at some point in time, the right opportunity was going to come along. And it really wasn't, not to knock any of my other jobs because I learned a lot, but it wasn't until Crip that I finally got to a place where I was like, all right, I can see what's happening now. I can see what's happening. And I'm in a spot where I feel like I'm finally making a career and not like working a job. And it was such a big and important revelation to me. And I've been at Crypt, it'll be 4 years in January. So this is fairly recent. But it really is just sort of holding internally onto the love and the dream I've always had of being able to create content that I felt like I was missing when I was younger. And that kept me going. And now I'm finally getting to do that. So there's light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, I grew up in Maryland when I was a kid too, in Chesapeake Beach. And
I'm curious, Misha, I'm going to say this, and I know that Dre is going to roll her eyes at me, but I'm just going to say it. I'm going to put it out there. I had the opportunity to make my acting debut recently, and I'm curious if there are, with where you are now, looking back on when you started, are there like words of advice that you would give yourself for being an actor, navigating the industry and your job now?
Yeah, actually, I'm starting to crystallize that. I think as actors, we often get some version of that question whenever it comes to press or even in informal settings. I don't have any regrets. I'm one of those people. I'm like, I don't have any regrets. But when it comes to how I found acting, I started in stage, and stage is by nature pretty homogenous. Your identity and your uniqueness are not celebrated for the most part. That's changing, thank God, especially on Broadway. But like, I did the Shakespeare festivals. I did, you know, an off-Broadway show. Like, these are places where my gender identity, as it was developing at the time, was certainly not celebrated. And I categorically started to get more work, more auditions taken seriously by casting directors, even by agents and reps. It's not just stop giving a fuck. I feel like that's really general advice. And of course, it's nice to say stop giving a fuck, but to stop trying to fit the fucking mold. I am not in the straight fucking mold. I'm not even in the gay mold. Like the sooner that I started, whether it's the visual stuff, like doing my nails the way that I wanted to, or the more mannerism stuff of like letting myself express whatever femme or mask or in between like mannerisms that like actually come out of me, all of a sudden I'm a human in my auditions. All of a sudden I'm alive in an interview because I'm being myself and I'm honoring my legitimate identity that falls way the fuck outside of the binary. So that's the advice I would give, is like, I wish I did that version of stop giving a fuck sooner, because I think people would, quite frankly, just enjoy me more and want me in spaces more because I stopped apologizing for not being the cookie cutter musical theater guy, you know?
Yeah. That's a lot of grace then, and that you have to give yourself. And also, like, it's something that people can tell you and you don't really imbibe it until you know. You know what I mean? It's like, no. It's not something that you can really, like, there's no shortcut to it.
Mm-mm. Unfortunately, there's not. You're right.
Yeah. But I would like to, I wish there was. I wish I could just take a pill and be okay. But it's something that I think I have to, like, do the work to do every day. It's not just like something that I've learned and then it's like I've metabolized and it's all good. You know, there are like times when that saboteur can just really, and it knows you so well.
Oh yeah. Well, because your saboteur knows you better than you know yourself. And I still experience that. There's even moments, you know, on set for Girl in the Woods, like every actor gets self-conscious because it's acting. But the one thing that I will say was the incredibly positive side, like I said, about the safe set, but I still had to get up every day and remember, like, okay, you are going to be really vulnerable right now because you're showing the inner workings of what it means to not know where you fall gender-wise, sexuality-wise, personally. And that's why those scenes were both incredibly fun, but also incredibly hard. I wish and hope, and I'm very excited for the future of specifically acting, because sure, it's the tokenizing version of trendy now, and we've talked about that on this podcast already, but I want to see queer actors, queer storytellers, queer writers permeate Hollywood in a meaningful way, in a saturated way, because then we will get to see the whole spectrum of queerness when it comes to storytelling and acting and TV and film. And that, I think, is the next step. And I hope, and I believe actually, that when that happens, when we start to see a deep saturation of all kinds of queer content and actors, hopefully kids growing up will not have to have such a conversation with themselves, because they're going to throw on Nickelodeon and see a non-binary individual just being. And that right there is power. That's queer power. That's mental health in a nutshell when it comes to the entertainment industry.
Well, fucking said.
Absolutely.
Well, fucking said. I have one. Was that real ketchup and mustard you were shooting into your mouth?
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Us in the pilot.
Yes, it was.
That was disgusting.
Oh, don't I know it? Don't I know it? And I actually, I'm weird. I don't like sauces and condiments. I don't like them in my life. So when that happened, because obviously you only get one or two takes with like something as messy as that, I got the two bottles in my hand. I looked Kristen dead in the eye and it was I'm going to do this once for you and I'm going to do it big and then we're done.
That was amazing.
Thank you so much.
All right, we're going to finish off this interview with a little fun and games. We thought we'd do a fuck, marry, kill horror icons edition. And, you know, if you haven't seen the movie, I'm sure you know the character. So
we'll see.
We'll see.
Okay, so fuck, marry, kill Freddy from Nightmare on Elm Street, Pinhead from the Hellraiser series, or Carrie from Carrie.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll go first. Fuck Terry, absolutely. Like, that's just, there's just a sex appeal to being like a deathly prom queen. Let's see. Mary, namely because, what is it, Pinhead?
Mm-hmm.
Namely because I'm only vaguely familiar with that character. So I'm going to go ahead and kill that character out of, like, fear of the unknown.
Okay. Okay.
But
legit.
Mary Freddy, because the ability, like, the idea of a superpower that allows me to go inside people's dreams sounds hot. And I feel like as a spouse, I would maybe, like, inherit that. those are my answers.
That's very good.
Nice. Okay. I am going to kill Pinhead. Also, because I think I've only seen the first Hellraiser and I wasn't like super impressed. And I don't like the way that Pinhead looks. I don't want to look at that. So we're going to kill Pinhead. I think I'm going to do the reverse. I'm going to marry Carrie. I think that Carrie would be completely different if she had been shown some kindness in her life. And those abilities are on point. So we're going to marry Carrie. And then I'm going to fuck Freddy Krueger because, why not? But also, he scares me and I don't want to have that in my life forever. So Carrie and I will make a beautiful partnership.
I'm sure there's a kink aspect to what this fucking dream demon can do at night. So, like, I think we...
I think Freddy is a chaotic verse, like, to be honest with you.
that's probably accurate. You're not wrong.
All right. Well, fuck, marry, kill, Scream Queens edition. So Jamie Lee Curtis is Laurie Strode in the Halloween series.
Jada Pinkett Smith as Gerald Lynn in Demon Knight, or Tommy.
Neve Campbell as Sydney in the Scream series.
I don't know Demon Knight. Am I like, is that?
I don't know.
Oh, do I need to see Demon Knight? It's the first Tales from the Crypt movie, and Jada Pinkett Smith is like one of the first Black Scream Queens in it.
Great.
Came out in the early 90s, yeah.
So that's very exciting to me. And I will say that purely because Jada Pinkett Smith, I'm going to fuck her in that one. I haven't seen it, but I'm excited about the prospect. It's like a blind date. Marry Jamie Lee Curtis, because this is me taking it weirdly meta, but if that career can last that long singing that one note, then I'm going to marry that, because that seems like a long, if not a happy, at least profitable marriage.
Nev.
I think it's Nev, but whatever.
Nev is, I'm going to kind of like passionately, maybe like with like some poison that like doesn't like hurt too much, kill her because the other two options were better.
That's sweet.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen Demon Knight either, but I just cannot in good conscience kill Jada Pinkett. Never ever would I do that. So I think that I am going to also kill Nev, just because Sydney Prescott, it's been a minute since I've seen the movie, but I remember being annoyed by her. So let's kill her in the most polite way that would not make
y'all are so nice.
upset. And then I want to say that I will, I'm gonna marry Jada Pinkett just for what she represents. And I will fuck Jamie Lee Curtis. polite kills.
Polite kills.
That is going to be the subheadline of this episode. Polite kills.
Polite kills.
Dre, do you want to take the third one?
Okay. Fuck, marry, kill. Iconic destinations. Okay. And live in, get away to, demolish. So the murder house from American Horror Story, the Overlook Hotel in The Shining, or Camp Crystal Lake from Friday the 13th.
Lit. Okay, I can
take
this.
So you could live in, get away to, or demolish.
Live in, get away to, or demolish. Demolish for me. Demolish the camp. because, you know, as somebody, I went to some crazy like rehab programs in the Utah desert. So like, I'm just not trying to go back to any sort of summer camp. So we can demolish that one.
Okay.
let me think. I have to have like passionate sex in AHS Murder House. Like that was one of actually my first exposures to horror as an adult. And it was so life changing for me to see Murder House. So just like passionate, like ongoing sex in the Murder House. And then what's my last one?
Live in with at the Overlook Hotel in The Shining.
Live in the Overlook Hotel. Honestly, I like being bougie and fancy. So that kind of tracks for me.
And haunted. So, okay. Yeah. Cute. And you, Jasmine?
My brain is not functioning. Wait, it's live in, demolish, and have sex in.
Get away too.
Yeah. Misha turned it into have sex in.
I got so turned on by the Murder House that everything went to shit.
All right. I'm going to demolish I'm going to get away to Camp Crystal Lake. I really feel like they could have survived that. I think there was a lot of dumb decisions made that I feel like I wouldn't make those. And I have not had the same experiences with camp that Misha did. In fact, I have had wonderful memories around summer camp. So I'm going to get away to Camp Crystal Lake. I am going to live in the Murder House, American Horror Story, season 1 and 2, on point. And that Murder House, I feel like it's like a party every day. There was like so many different people. Plus, I know they're ghosts, but like there's something that's sort of a little bit beautiful about all of them getting to be together as a family. Am I misremembering that? Did I just like that ending?
No, you're right.
So yeah. I'll get to live in internal happiness with my girlfriend who I'll bring along. She may think that that's a nightmare, but I think that it's beautiful. So, and then that obviously leaves the Shining Hotel to be demolished as it should be.
Gotcha. Well, thank you so much, Jasmine and Misha, for joining us. Yeah, do you want to shout out your social media handles or something that you want us to take a look at?
Sure. I'm at Misha Oshirovich on all platforms. It's social media is fake, but I try to put real love into it. So go do that.
Like that.
I'm at Jazz Face Killa. It's JAZZ Face Killa on Instagram and Twitter. I do not get on social media all that much, but please like give me a shout. Tell me what you thought about the show. Yell at me if you want to, but I stand by everything I said.
You can yell at me. Yes, she should.
You're not gonna change my mind.
if you come to this platform, you come to the wrong platform. So that's all.
Preferably give me a shout. Let me know you watched the show and what you thought about it.
I can't wait to watch the back half. We only got the first 5 for the screener. So, and 5 was a very intense episode. And I'm just
five
like,
starts getting into
is
it.
Is very intense.
So I'm just like gripping the edge of my wing back. Like, wait, I want to watch the next one. And like, oh shit.
October 21st. It's a Thursday. Peacock, you can watch it.
Yeah.
You don't even have to pay, but if you don't pay, then you won't get to watch them all like the rest of us will. It's not that much money, but regardless, you can check it out October 21st on Peacock. Please do. We're very proud of it.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.